of the Diablo Canyon license renewal application. My name is Bill Mayer, and I work at the NRC's regional office in Arlington, Texas, and it's my pleasure to serve as the facilitator at tonight's meeting. To join me in facilitation is my good friend and mentor, Mr. Lance Rakovan, who is a communication specialist in the Office of the Executive Director of Operations at NRC. The purpose of this meeting is to provide as much information to the public as we can about the NRC's process for review of the license application for Diablo Canyon's extended operation. This will be a departure from our typical model that we use for license renewal discussions. A typical license renewal would have this type of meeting lumped with the environmental scoping comment solicitation meeting in one meeting to accomplish everything in at the same time. Based on some previous discussions that we had with local and state officials and the interest that we know exists in the community regarding Diablo Canyon's license renewal, we decided to depart from that model. Today's meeting is intended for the NRC to provide as much information and answer as many questions to the public as possible regarding the process that we'll be engaging in to review this application. On March 3rd, we'll be conducting the second series of meetings, which will be the environmental scoping meetings, which will solicit comments from the community for things that need to be included in the NRC's environmental review. So folks who are looking for speakers cards, that's the reason why there were no speakers cards to be issued for this meeting. It's intended to get as many questions answered as possible. Now, some folks may have brought some environmental scoping comments to this meeting with the intent of providing that to the NRC. Please do not be disappointed. There will be other opportunities besides that March 3rd meeting to provide those comments, and the folks who will be providing the presentation will go into that shortly about how to do that. Last month, the project managers and I made a trip to talk to local officials to provide the same sort of information that we want to provide to the public tonight. And we were able to identify from their questions a number of issues that are primary on their minds and probably on your minds as well. Unfortunately, we didn't account for all those issues that were of interest. At this afternoon's meeting, there were several technical questions on things like the spent fuel storage at the site that is the subject of an entirely different license that the NRC issues and an entirely different group of folks who would be able to answer those questions. And there were security questions that unfortunately went unanswered correctly by the NRC. So we would like to try something a little different than what we did this afternoon. As you came in, you were probably given a couple of 3x5 cards, and I think Lance has a couple more 3x5 cards, and I'll be passing them out as well during the course of the meeting. For folks who want to ask questions but don't want to go on the microphone to ask those questions, but also folks that want to ask questions that may be outside the scope of what the folks here are going to talk about, we don't have all the answers to all the questions that may be on your mind, so the purpose on them and be able to keep the discussion on the pertinent topics at the time. Let me go into some logistics on the meeting. Obviously, the emergency exits are here to your right, and if you do hear a fire alarm, and they assure me that they do have a fire alarm here at the hotel, please exit the building as quickly as you can, and please go as far out into the parking lot as you can to allow other folks behind you to be able to get out in a timely fashion. If anybody's asking about restrooms, if you came in through the main lobby, you pass the restrooms on the way out here. To leave, to find the restrooms, you would go out these doors, make a right. When you run into the wall, don't run into the wall, but make a left, and you'll see a sign for the restrooms on the right-hand side, both a men's and a women's restroom. The hotel was nice enough to provide water to us, and we want to make sure all our speakers have water available, so they don't get any dry mouth and have to interrupt their answers to questions. We didn't get coffee, and that was a comment that was already presented at the afternoon meeting, so we roger that. I'll ask that anybody who has a cell phone, please put it on vibrate or silence We wouldn't want that to be a distraction to folks who want to get answers to their questions. And I'll also remind you that the AGP video is taping this meeting, so we ask that folks who have questions wait until you're able to get one of the hand mics that Lance and I will be carrying around and make sure that you don't shout out a question from the floor that may not be picked up on the video. On the way in, you probably saw some NRC public meeting feedback forms. We urge you to take those forms and please fill those out. We respect whatever comments you have. We understand we'll get a lot of comments from the floor orally on the conduct of the meeting, but anything that you want to provide for us to make considerations for future meetings, we appreciate that. I talked a little bit about some of the ground rules and telling about the AGP taping of the meeting. The cards were intended for folks who may not want to go on mic and may want to ask questions but not necessarily be identified to everyone in the room, and also for folks who ask questions that we may not be able to answer, that we can get those answers back to you in a timely fashion. The meeting will be divided into two parts. The first part will be a presentation from the NRC folks here on the dais, and they'll go into the processes that are involved with the NRC's review of the Diablo Canyon license renewal application. During that time, Lance and I will be canvassing the room, picking up whatever cards folks want us to take back to the speakers, and after a 20-minute break, the speakers will start to read answers to the questions from those cards. And as I said before, if the answer to a question prompts a question on your part, please raise your hand. And after a question is answered from the card, if there are other questions that need to be asked from the floor or folks don't feel comfortable asking their questions on cards and they want to express their questions orally, please raise your hand and Lance and I will call on you in turn and try to get as many people to get their as many questions as they have answered as possible. We ask that if you are going to ask a question, you may have additional questions and want to have their voice and their question heard. Also ask that if you are going to ask questions from the floor, try to keep the points to as few questions as possible at a time so that the folks answering the questions aren't trying to keep track of 10 questions that are asked in series fashion and they're trying to answer 10 questions after a long period. As I said before, the purpose of these measures is to try to maximize participation from as many people as possible, and we hope that it is a rewarding experience for folks to get as many questions answered as possible. At this point, I'd like to introduce the speakers that are going to be giving presentations and answering questions. Starting on your left is Mr. Drew Stivenberg. Drew is the Environmental Project Manager for the Diablo Canyon License Renewal Application. Next to Drew is Kimberly Green. Kim is the Safety Project Manager for the Diablo Canyon License Renewal Application. To Kim's left is Mr. David Rona. David is the Projects Branch Chief for the Division of License Renewal there in NRC headquarters, and he is Drew's and Kim's supervisor. Next to David is Neil O'Keefe. Neil works in our office in Arlington, Texas. Neil is the branch chief who will supervise the regional-based inspectors who will perform the inspections that are associated with the license renewal. And last but certainly not least is Dr. Michael Peck. Dr. Peck is the senior resident inspector at Diablo Canyon, and it is his job to do the day-to-day oversight of the plant through the NRC. Eyes, and Michael has a lot of perspective on a lot of the plant operations, and hopefully we'll get a lot of questions answered that pertain to plant operation, plant safety. Without any further ado, I'll turn it over to Drew to go into the NRC presentation, and then, as I mentioned, we'll collect cards and take a 20-minute break and then start answering cards from the dais and also questions from the floor. Drew? Let me take one more opportunity. You can get up. Some folks may have been given some copies of the NRC slides. The ones that have the tiny slides with the notes on them are complete, but unfortunately we have some copies that somehow got out there that only have slides through the first 10 slides or so. If there's any problem with that, are we working on getting some extra copies? Okay, Lance has got some extra copies if somebody got shortchanged with some of the slides that were incomplete. So I'll turn it over to Drew and let Drew start the presentation.
All right. Thank you, Bill. As Bill mentioned, my name is Drew Stivenberg, and I'm the project manager responsible for the environmental review of the Diablo Canyon license renewal application. I'm here today with other NRC staff to provide you all with more information about NRC's license renewal review process and the opportunities to be involved in that process. I will first address some general information about the meeting's purpose and general power plant oversight. As Bill mentioned, as part of this process, we will return again to this area on Wednesday, March 3rd, at this location to conduct two environmental scoping meetings, during which we will be soliciting formal public comments on environmental issues for our review. Before I get into a specific discussion of the license renewal process, I'd like to take a minute to talk about the NRC in terms of what we do and what our mission is. The NRC is a federal agency established by the Energy Reorganization Act of 1974 that regulates the civilian use of nuclear material, including issuing power plant licenses as authorized by the Atomic Energy Act. Now, that act provides for a 40-year license term for power reactors. This 40-year term is based primarily on economic considerations and antitrust factors, and not specifically on a safety limitation for the plant. The specific regulations that the NRC enforces are contained in Title 10 of the Code of Federal Regulations. You'll often hear that referred to as 10 CFR. Now, in exercising its authority, the NRC's mission is threefold. One is to ensure the adequate protection of public health and safety. Another is to protect the environment. And a third is to promote the common defense and security. The NRC accomplishes its mission through a combination of regulatory programs and processes, such as conducting inspections, issuing enforcement actions, assessing licensee performance, and evaluating operating experience from nuclear plants across the country and around the world. The NRC has resident inspectors at all operating nuclear power plants. These inspectors are considered the eyes and ears of the NRC. They carry out our safety mission on a daily basis and are the front lines of ensuring acceptable safety performance and compliance with regulatory requirements. As Bill mentioned earlier, at this session, we are joined by Michael Peck, who is the senior resident inspector at Diablo Canyon. NRC's ongoing oversight addresses many issues related to plant safety and security. A prime example of this is seismic safety. We know that seismic issues are a major concern in this community. For the most part, seismic issues are dealt with on an ongoing basis as part of continuing safety oversight rather than waiting for a license renewal review. There are a few exceptions, however, in that seismic events are considered in the environmental review as contributors to severe accidents in the staff's evaluation of severe accident mitigation alternatives. And in the safety review, the staff will evaluate whether the applicant has proposed adequate plans to manage the aging of seismically qualified structures and components. Another example of an ongoing oversight issue not specifically dealt with in license renewal is emergency planning. The NRC oversees on an ongoing basis emergency planning and preparedness within the plant site. Outside the plant site, the NRC coordinates with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, the lead federal agency in emergency planning. FEMA stages emergency drills in cooperation with locations. In addition, the staff at headquarters are also involved in monitoring and responding to any issues that may arise. For more information about the oversight process for operating power plants, You can follow the link at the bottom of this slide. So far, we've addressed several items of ongoing NRC regulatory oversight. We also think it's important to point out some areas in which the state of California has ongoing oversight or jurisdiction. While this list is not inclusive, it does address a number of issues that we understand have also been areas of concern. Many of these issues are regulatory processes that occur independent of NRC regulation, and NRC regulation, specifically our safety, public health, and environmental oversight, typically occurs independent of state-level oversight, with a couple of relevant license renewal-related exceptions that I'll address as part of this presentation. One area of state oversight is electric reliability and planning. These issues are overseen by state-level bodies, including the California Public Utilities Commission and California Energy Commission. Many of you are familiar with Assembly Bill 1632. That bill specifically relates to the state's authority to address issues of electric reliability and policy planning. Another area of state oversight is the ability to set electric rates and determine whether utilities can recover costs for various expenditures. The California Public Utilities Commission determines utility rates and how much a utility is allowed to recover from ratepayers for its planned expenditures. In addition, the state, through its water control boards, exercises oversight for water consumption and quality. Permits that allow Diablo Canyon Power Plant to use water without which it could not operate are controlled by state-level authority. Further, under elements of the Clean Water Act, the NRC cannot issue a renewed license unless the state determines that continued operation of Diablo Canyon is consistent with state water quality standards. An additional area of state oversight, or I'm sorry, also the NRC cannot issue a renewed license without certification from the California Coastal Commission that license renewal is consistent with the state's coastal management plan. An additional area of state oversight is air quality, in which the state issues and enforces emissions permits and limits, as well as implementation programs under the Federal Clean Air Act. Again, this is not an exhaustive list of state-level authorities, but there are several areas that relate either to local interest or to issues that have arisen in past renewal reviews. And with that, I'm going to pass the presentation over to Nate Ferrer to talk some more about the general process and safety review.
Thank you, Drew. Good evening. As Drew mentioned, along with Kim Green, I'm working as a project manager responsible for the safety review of the Diablo Canyon license renewal application. And now, as Drew previously mentioned, the Atomic Energy Act provides for a 40-year license term for power reactors. Our regulations also include provisions for extending plant operation for up to an additional 20 years. For Diablo Canyon, the operating license for Unit 1 will expire midnight, November 2nd, 2021, and 24 years in the case of Unit 2. And roughly one-third of applicants for license renewal have submitted applications earlier than Diablo Canyon has done. The first step of the license renewal process is to perform an acceptance and sufficiency review of the application. When the NRC receives a license renewal application, the staff examines it to determine whether the application contains sufficient information to conduct a formal review. If the application has sufficient information, the NRC places it onto the NRC's docket for that power plant, and the review can begin. In the case of Diablo Canyon, the NRC notified the public of its acceptance decision by way of press release on January 11th, and a Federal Register notice was published on January 21st, announcing the opportunity for the public to intervene in the process and request adjudicatory hearings. An application consists of a number of items, such as general information, which includes business and administrative information about the site, and technical information about plant structures and components, and how the applicant proposes to manage aging of structures and components important to safety. This technical information is the primary focus of the staff's safety review. The application also includes an environmental report, which is the applicant's assessment of the environmental impacts of continued operation. And this information is the starting point of the staff's environmental review. This flowchart helps illustrate the license renewal process, which involves two parallel reviews, the safety and environmental review. These two reviews evaluate separate aspects of the license renewal application. The chart also features three other considerations in the commission's decision on whether or not to renew an operating license. One of these considerations is an independent review performed by the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards, or ACRS, statutorily mandated by the Atomic Energy Act of 1954. The ACRS is a group of recognized technical experts in various engineering. Reviews the license renewal application, NRC staff safety evaluation and inspection findings, and report their findings and recommendations directly to the commission. Hearings may also be conducted if interested stakeholders submit concerns or contentions and their request for a hearing is granted. The Atomic Safety and Licensing Board and adjudicatory panel will conduct the hearings. The commission considers the outcome of these hearings in its decision on whether or not to renew an operating license. And as part of the environmental review, the staff consults state, local, federal, and tribal officials, and the staff holds public meetings to receive comments on environmental scoping as well as the draft environmental impact statement. The regulations governing license renewal are based on two guiding principles, and to effectively communicate contains an acceptable level of safety with the possible exception of the effects of aging on certain systems, structures, and components. The second principle is that the current plant-specific licensing basis must be maintained during the renewed license term in the same manner and to the same extent as during the original license term. In other words, the same rules that apply under the current license will apply in the renewed license. In addition, a renewed license will include conditions that must be met to ensure that the aging of structures and components important to safety are adequately managed so that the plant's current licensing basis is maintained during the period of extended operation. The NRC Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation reviews the license renewal application and supporting documentation from our headquarters office in Rockville, Maryland, as well as on-site during audits. The staff documents its results in a Safety Evaluation Report, or SER. The SER documents the basis and conclusions of the NRC staff's safety review and is made publicly available. In addition, a team of specialized inspectors travel to the reactor site to verify that the aging management programs have been or are ready to be implemented. The focus of the license renewal safety review is on managing the detrimental effects of aging. The review provides reasonable assurance that the effects of aging will be managed for the period of extended operation in accordance with the plant's current licensing basis. Many of the existing programs and regulatory requirements that are already provide adequate aging management will continue to be applicable after renewal. The license renewal review focuses on systems, structures, and components for which current activities and requirements may not be sufficient to manage aging during the period of extended operation. And as I mentioned previously, the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards provides an independent review of the license renewal application and the staff's safety evaluation report and provides a recommendation to the commission. And now I'll hand the presentation back over to Drew to discuss the environmental review process.
Thank you, Nate. The National Environmental Policy Act of 1969 requires that federal agencies follow a systematic approach in evaluating potential environmental impacts associated with certain actions. In that context, we're required to consider the impact of the proposed action and also any mitigation measures for those impacts that we consider to be significant. In addition, our regulations require us to consider alternatives to license renewal, the proposed action, and that includes other ways of generating electricity or dealing with electrical load. We then compare the likely impacts from license renewal to those of the alternatives in making a recommendation as to whether license renewal is a reasonable option. In preparing an EIS, or Environmental Impact Statement, or GEIS, that addressed a number of issues common to all nuclear power plants. You may recall that NRC staff was in Pismo Beach in October to receive public comments on the proposed revision to this GEIS. Because that revision has not yet been finalized, the Diablo Canyon review will be conducted using the original GEIS. Now, that document is included on the CD that's available out on the entrance table, and it's also available on the NRC website. The staff will supplement the GEIS with a site-specific environmental impact statement that will address issues specific to this individual site. The staff also evaluates the conclusions reached in the GEIS to determine if there is any new and significant information that would change any of those conclusions found in the GEIS. For those of you who cannot attend the March 3rd scoping meeting, the NRC staff is also accepting comments via email and regular mail. The addresses are included at the end of the presentation packet that we had on the entrance table. The NRC staff's review of environmental issues covers many resource areas. These include the areas mentioned on this slide, such as terrestrial and aquatic ecology, water and air resources, environmental justice, socioeconomic issues, and human health. The staff will rely on information in the GEIS, information gleaned from the public scoping process, information contained in the applicant's environmental report, and information the staff gathers during its on-site audit and off-site research. As I mentioned earlier, public input is a major driver of our environmental review. Now, this slide shows some important milestones for the license renewal process. I won't go through each of them since you have them on the packets that we had on the entrance table. Now, the highlighted dates indicate opportunities for public involvement in the review. We are currently in the period during which the public can request an opportunity for hearing, as well as within the environmental scoping period. This slide identifies primary points of contact in the NRC for the safety and environmental reviews. Also, that's part of the packet. And this slide identifies where documents related to our review may be found in the local area. The San Luis Obispo Public Library and the Paso Robles Public Library have agreed to make the license renewal application available for public review. In addition, the draft environmental impact statement will also be available at each library once we issue that document. These documents will also be on the NRC's website at the web address shown at the bottom of the page. Now, with that, that concludes the staff presentation portion of this evening, and I'm going to turn the meeting back over to our facilitator, Bill Mayer.
Thank you. It was brought to my attention that I may have committed a horrible gaffe in my opening remarks when I said that security, so if there are questions related to those, we may not be able to answer them here, but we would like to get an answer to anybody who does want an answer to questions along those lines. With that, I think we'll take a 20-minute break, and we'll come back and we'll start to receive questions. Okay, we've got a number of questions that have been submitted in writing, and we'll also be entertaining questions in oral fashion. It's currently just about 8 o'clock, and even though it's not on the agenda that you may have picked up on the way in, we're going to try to be a little bit flexible, and if the meeting goes past 9 o'clock, which has a good chance of doing, we'll try to take another break at 9 just to give folks a chance to stretch and gather their thoughts and such. For the question and answer part of the meeting, in addition to the folks who I introduced earlier up here on the podium, we have a couple of other folks who are able to assist us in providing answers. Joining us by telephone with an appropriately short delay period, but it seemed to work in the afternoon, is Dr. Annie Kammerer. Dr. Kammerer is a senior seismologist at NRC headquarters. She unfortunately could not be here in person, but she did indicate her desire to participate as much as possible. She is preparing for another meeting that she is involved with elsewhere and is willing to participate by telephone. Beyond NRC folks, we have some experts who may be able to answer some questions that folks have with regard to emergency preparedness and emergency planning. In the back of the room is Mr. Harry Sherwood. Harry is the Technological Hazards Branch Chief at FEMA Region 9 in Oakland. Harry is the senior federal official who is charged with determining the adequacy of the offsite planning for Diablo Canyon emergency planning and determining whether the plans and procedures and performance and exercises is adequate to tell the NRC that FEMA has reasonable assurance that public health and safety can be protected. In addition to Harry, we have Mr. Ron Alsop. Ron is the County Emergency Services Manager, and he's the man for making sure that those plans and procedures are adequate and able to protect the public in the event of a problem at Diablo Canyon. With that, I think I'll start the folks from the podium to start reading written questions. And if there are questions from the floor, please raise your hand and we'll recognize you and allow you to follow up.
All right, let me make sure you can hear me. I'm going to start with a couple of questions, general license renewal questions that we received from the audience. And I have two that are fairly closely related, and I'll deal with them both at the same time because of it. The first part of it is, how many license renewal applications has the NRC received to date? Currently, I believe we've received on the order of around 72. It's in the low 70s at this point. Of those, I believe 59 at this point have gone through to have their licenses renewed. The follow-up question then is, and it's on both of these, additional information and supplementation by the applicant. So that's to answer those two questions.
Hey, Drew?
I'm sorry, yes?
If Ms. Rochelle Becker would like to ask some follow-up questions.
Please.
Thank you. I'm Rochelle Becker, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. And I'm going to give you this because I have a lot of questions, and you probably want them handy. I didn't want to write them down. The Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility believes that this panel may be unaware of historical information that has heavily influenced California's perception of PG&E's license renewal application. The application blatantly defied the state's recommendations and requirements to update seismic and other studies for Diablo Canyon. Absent this information, the acceptance of PG&E's license review panel was a license review application was an incomplete application. The missing information, the significance of two major active earthquake faults less than 3 miles offshore of Diablo Canyon, to the economy of California is an omission that has been very costly in the past. In 1988, after a three-year ratepayer-funded review of construction cost, the Public Staff Division of the California Public Utilities Commission wrote, quote, because of PG&E's failure to discover the Hosgree Fault and later design errors related to seismic retrofits, the Diablo Canyon plant had to be constructed and reconstructed three times. The plant was essentially complete in 1976 at a total cost of about $1 billion, when the NRC required PG&E to redesign and reconstruct it to withstand severe shaking that could occur at a range of a large earthquake fault as a result of a large earthquake fault on the Hosgree Fault. By 1981, the plant has been redesigned and reconstructed a second time to correct the deficiencies in the original seismic design. The increase has the total about $2.4 billion. From 1981 to 1985, the plant had to be redesigned and reconstructed a third time to correct the errors made in the earlier redesign, increasing its cost from $2.4 billion to $5.18 billion. For the last 5 years, the state has held workshops, instituted an in-depth analysis of the costs, benefits, and risks of reliance on aging reactors, submitted recommendations, and issued requirements, and has made it clear to PG&E that it expected the utility to complete all recommended AB 1632 studies. Unfortunately, PG&E again decided that seismic review could wait until after the NRC had spent time and resources on a license renewal application that dedicated a single page to the collection and independent review of new seismic information. Just this month, the NRC's chair quoted Benjamin Franklin in a recent speech, quote, "It takes many good deeds to build a good reputation and only one bad one to lose it." The NRC has done many good deeds, recruited, developed, and retained top-notch staff, developed strongly regulatory inspection and enforcement programs, and many others that I will discuss later this morning to build a good reputation. But Ben Franklin's insight about one bad deed has particular resonance in the nuclear field. Few civilian technologies, if any, have the ability of nuclear energy to attract public attention and elicit public concerns for an additional 20 years after the current expiration of 2025. Unlike the original license, no one, not the utility, the NRC, the DOE, nor the administration, no one believes that a highly radioactive waste produced during this license extension will leave our coast in our lifetimes. So what's the hurry? The Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility asks this license renewal panel and Region 4 of the NRC to support our request to place a hold on PG&E's application. We also have requested that the Commission create a joint NRC-USGS state seismic panel to resolve earthquake concerns before proceeding with the license renewal process. We believe this is a reasonable, responsible, and cost-effective proposal to resolve an issue that could devastate this community, the state, and this nation's economy. We do have a list of questions for this panel, and you may be partially able to answer them tonight. However, we are sending all of our questions to all of our state and federal representatives so that they also know what questions this community has. Questions. What criteria did the NRC rely upon to determine PG&E's license renewal application was complete and should be accepted for review?
The NRC completes its review by going through the regulations and determining if it's submitted the information that's required by regulation, both for the safety side of the application and also for the environmental report that they submit as part of the application. We also have a standard review plan for license renewal, which is a document that's on that CD that's outside available, which also has a checklist of all the information that we are to go through and determine if the app placed it in the application. If that information is there, the NRC determines that it's sufficient and contains sufficient information to begin its review. It does not necessarily mean that we will not have questions that might necessitate an amendment or supplement to their application during our review process.
What departments, divisions, departments, or offices at the NRC reviewed PG&E's application for license renewal?
Are you referring just to for acceptance or throughout the whole review
process? Right now, just for acceptance. I think that's all you've done, right? Was accepted?
We've accepted it. Once we accept the application for review, the NRC can then begin its formal review of the application. So if you want to talk about the acceptance review, The Division of License Renewal participated in it, as well as Division of Safety Systems. And that probably encompassed about 20 reviewers. At least 20 reviewers looked at the application. Their environmentalist and technical reviewers that looked at the environmental report, and then there were safety reviewers that looked at the safety side of the application.
Is contact information available to the public for these reviewers?
We request all contact on the review to be done through our project managers, and if they need to get you in contact with the appropriate staff, they can do so.
So any questions are referred to this panel, I'm assuming, and then you refer them to someone else?
You know, we'll discuss that with our advisory committee, reactor safeguards, and work towards closure of those items. And if, you know, we do end up accepting the result of those closures, then we will issue the safety evaluation report in its final format.
And it's not open to public review before you issue it in the final format?
We make it publicly available, but it's not specifically open for public comment as our draft environmental impact statements are.
Yeah, that draft environmental impact statement will be issued for formal public comment, and that will also contain a list of all the reviewers who worked on that review as well.
Okay. Will all draft reports by the NRC staff and consultants, PG&E staff and consultants relating to license renewal be posted on the NRC's website?
Any of the information that NRC relies on for its determinations will be publicly available. And so those will be issued with reference information in the EIS, and anything that's not under copyright for somebody else will have available in our document system.
So will the public be notified that you're submitting these reports so we can review them?
So for the environmental side, we'll have press releases that go out when we issue the supplemental environmental impact statement. That'll be essentially the report that we issue. We'll also have one other document called the scoping summary report that'll come out prior to that, which will have all the environmental scoping comment that we've received during our environmental scoping process. But those the EIS will definitely have a press release, and the scoping summary report will go out to anybody who's on the service list or who requests to be involved.
How do you get on the service list?
I can put you on as soon as you're away from the podium. We'll get your information. I've got your card here.
I think you got it.
Okay, consider yourself on it.
Got it. Okay.
Drew, I'd just like to add, we are in the process of going from a paper distribution system to an e-service list. So in the near future, we may be contacting you, if you're on our service list, to ask for email addresses.
It's on there.
Got it.
We're good.
It's my preference, too. Thank you. Does the NRC intend to issue, and would it issue, a license renewal before the state-required seismic studies are complete and reviewed?
Right now, we're aware that you've sent a letter to the commission addressing that issue. The staff will be tasked to respond to that issue formally. So that's something that's currently in process. That'll come back from the commission, a specific answer to that question. So because it kind of elevated up to the commission, we have to let that process run its course, and they'll come back with an answer to that.
Okay. Would this panel support our request to the commission for a stay of the license renewal process and independent seismic oversight committee?
I think at this point we're kind of out of that decision-making process.
I ask you to recommend, not decide.
Dave, I don't know if you wanted to respond to that.
We have a process for when we get letters from the public, and it's a collaborative effort between the staff and then whoever the signator is of that. So when we come out with the decision, it'll be a unified decision from the staff and the management that's issued that.
It'll be a decision from the staff and not the chair? Is that correct?
Well,
I sent the letter to the chair because you said you couldn't make that decision, so that's why I sent it to the chair.
Well, yeah, I can't speak for the chairman, but we have a process when incoming letters are received, his office or the office of the secretary will determine who's going to...
Not the PUC.
The California Seismic Commission?
Yes, actually, because I supported the work that was done by the CEC report last year, and we had discussions with them in reference to that document.
I'm sorry, did you say you supported the work that was done by the CEC last year?
I should say I was the NRC internal contact related to seismic issues for the California Energy Commission report that came out discussing the issues, any issues related to energy reliability.
Okay. I think I understood that. Have you met with anyone in the legislature? California legislature, I'm sorry.
No, I haven't met with them. I've had discussions with them.
And who in the legislature have you had discussions with?
Mr. Blakely's staff.
Dr. Blakely's staff, yeah. Did you say? Okay.
Yes.
The Coastal Commission?
Rochelle?
Yes. Okay. Have you met with the Coastal Commission? Okay.
Have I met with the Coastal Commission? No.
Have any of the seismic experts met with the Coastal Commission?
Not to my knowledge, because they're not the ones providing us data. If they were providing data, we would need to clarify. We would meet with them.
I didn't hear her.
Annie, could you repeat that, please, perhaps a little more slowly?
Yes. The answer is no. We have not met with the nor anyone that I'm aware of has met with the Coastal Commission. It's a little bit unclear to me where the question would come from, because they haven't provided us data in terms of the seismic hazard review.
Thank you.
Rochelle, if you could, how many more questions do you have?
I'm on 8, and I have 12. Who asked me that question? Oh, Lance? Okay.
That would be me. I just want to make sure that we have an opportunity for other stakeholders to get some of their questions answered as well. Would you be okay with kind of taking a break and coming back and hitting the rest of yours, once we've had a chance to get through some of the questions that our other stakeholders have given us? No? Everybody's okay with that? Okay, I've got one person here who wants a chance, and everybody else seems okay. So
I think that the majority wins then, huh? No, I think the majority wins.
Sir, are you okay with yielding the floor for 4 more questions? Okay, he's not. So I'm sorry, but I got to go with my single stakeholder here. I don't want to cause a war, but I've got somebody here who would like to ask a
question. Excuse me, Lance, did you want to hand him your microphone like everyone else? Seeing as a card he could have handed in?
That depends. Sir? Okay, can everyone please give us a chance here, okay? We're trying to be responsive to stakeholders. Okay, I understand that Rochelle had a lot of questions, but when we started this meeting, we said that we wanted to give a chance for various stakeholders to be able to talk. Now, I apologize if I'm stepping on Rochelle by yielding the floor to somebody who wanted to speak, but this gentleman wished to speak. So I apologize, but I'd like to give him a chance to answer or to ask at least 1 or 2 questions.
I don't care.
Lance, let's go ahead.
Now, irregardless of if and when a renewal would be granted.
Well, let's see. The NRC granted a license to store high-level radioactive waste on site and denied us a seismic proceeding on that. So, you know, we really don't want to have to spend money to litigate a seismic issue when it's before everybody. I mean, seriously, you've seen the seismic map outside. You know that there's a new fault there. You know what the state's mandated. So just tell anybody in the public today that seismic is outside the scope of a license renewal for Diablo Canyon is not going to fly. It's not going to fly.
Rochelle, I'd like to keep questions going.
I will go back to my questions. Number 9.
If I could, there are actually 2 elements of seismic evaluation that are within the scope of license renewal. One of them has to do with severe accident mitigation alternatives. Seismic events are certainly a feeder into the potential for severe accidents, so it's something that fits into the scope of the environmental review in that regard. So the applicant has a seismic probabilistic risk assessment. It's something the staff will be looking at while they do their review and may have some questions about when they do their review. Since that's just getting started and since the environmental scoping period is still open, that's the kind of input, especially some of the things that you just mentioned, that would be worthwhile bringing up again as we're getting into that period. The second piece has to do with seismically qualified components. They'll have to have aging management plans for addressing the aging of those components as well. So there are some aspects that fit in. However, the entirety of the seismic issue doesn't necessarily. So it's not entirely outside of the scope, but it doesn't all fit within the scope either.
I think my biggest concern is the 2011 date for approval and the 2013 date that PG&E has for finally finishing its seismic studies. It seems to be a mismatch there that I think you need to take into consideration. Has the NRC reviewed the cost, benefit, and risk analysis mandated by our Assemblyman Sam Blakesley in AB 1632?
I'm sorry, I want to make sure I understand your question. Is it, have we looked at it, or will we be reviewing it as part of the license renewal proceeding?
Have you reviewed it?
Does anyone, have we looked at that? Does NRC look at that? Okay. Annie, are you familiar with that?
I am, but we haven't reviewed it because we're just looking purely at the hazard. In terms of cost-benefit work, that doesn't have any impact into the hazard assessment, which is purely a scientific review.
Within the scope of the environmental review, our regulations specifically exclude a cost-benefit analysis of the proposed action or a cost-benefit analysis of the alternatives.
Yeah, I know that it precludes you from looking at economics. I'd ask you if you'd reviewed the AB 1632 studies.
I've looked at a lot of the AB 1632 studies.
Okay.
But spent a fair amount of time on the docket website. I've read the committee report. I've read some of the other, a lot of the recommendations that have come out of their process. I've read the text of the bill itself. I've looked at the introductions by Barbara Byron of the Energy Commission for that process as they were getting started. And I've also looked at some of the in-process reports that came out. So I'm somewhat familiar. But certainly that's an
issue. And seismic restraints that would be within the scope of license renewal.
The Alliance requests that the NRC justify its aging management systems in any previous approvals where tritium leaks have been discovered since the issuance of license renewal. Just a request. You don't need to answer. As an alternative to relicensing of Diablo Canyon, will the NRC consider a state-of-the-art renewable energy park at the nuclear site?
I would suggest that we'll be looking at all different kinds of renewable energy as potential alternatives to license renewal. It's not within the NRC's jurisdiction to build a renewable energy park at the site, but certainly in terms of, you know, what other kinds of ways could you use to generate electricity, we'll be looking to find out what could potentially go there and what could potentially fit that need. So to the extent that you have specific inputs about what you think ought to be considered for alternatives to license renewal, that's excellent scope and comment, so we appreciate it.
Okay. The above questions are submitted in a sincere effort to remove the premier confrontational and controversial issue defining Diablo Canyon. Two major active earthquake faults within 3 miles offshore of Diablo Canyon's aging reactors. Yes, the steam generators, turbine rotors, and reactor vessel heads may be new, but the technology is 1960s. And in 1967, when the state granted a permit to operate these twin reactors, no one knew of any offshore faults. There were some who would spend years denying the existence, magnitude, and impact of these faults at a very costly price. We ask the NRC to consider this history and current state requirements for seismic studies and to hold PG&E's license renewal application in abeyance. Furthermore, the NRC should demonstrate a willingness to bring its collaboration process, which I found on your new website, to California. The Commission's creation of a joint NRC, USGS, and State Seismic Review panel to independently review PG&E's completed seismic studies would be a valuable contribution to the openness and transparency that is always encouraged by Mr. Yasko. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochelle. Those are all excellent questions, I feel. Let's go to another question from the cards, please.
I have an easy question. How many of you live near an operating nuclear power plant? And I'm pretty sure that I'm the only one. I live 2 miles from the gate in Avila Beach. That's an easy question.
Actually, all our residents live pretty close to the power plant they're assigned to, but Dave Rona and myself were formerly residents, just like Michael here was. So an awful lot of the NRC people are, especially the inspectors, have lived at or near power plants.
Yes, my question concerns, well, first of all, I'm not associated with the power industry whatsoever or nuclear power. I'd just like to say that And I fished offshore there of Diablo. It looks like a nice place, but it looks like it's got a lot of room for, you know, expansion. And how can we expand Diablo to, say, triple the size?
Yeah, and actually, just to clarify, we're not from Pacific Gas and Electric. It would be up to the current plant operators, PG&E, to decide whether that's something they wanted to try to pursue. In the state of California, there's currently a moratorium on adding new nuclear units until there's a long-term repository for spent fuel. So they would have to surmount a state-level hurdle first. After that, whoever wanted to build it would have to apply to the NRC for a license for a new power plant. So it's not specifically something that's addressed within license renewal, and something the NRC wouldn't be necessarily a proponent of. We would be reviewing the license application for that power plant. So our role would be limited to, what are they looking to build? Where are they looking to build it? Is it some place that would be appropriate for a power plant? You'd have to review sites and what have you. So it's not so much something that we'd be looking at in the license renewal process.
I have a drawing in my office that shows 6 units at Diablo Canyon. So at one time during the construction permit phase, somebody was thinking in the terms of greater than 2 units at Diablo Canyon.
Could another company come in if PG&E decides not to do it and go ahead and build it?
We're not the right people to ask that
okay.
question.
Thank you.
I have one from a card. In your opinion, would solar, wind, and wave generation sources of energy production be as vulnerable to a terrorist attack as the current nuclear facility? Since the solar, wind, or wave generation facility or energy production facility would not have the security that the current nuclear plant has, I would say that the vulnerability to a current or to a terrorist attack would be greater at one of those facilities. However, if you exclude the loss of electricity that would happen in either case, I think the consequences would be less.
Question from the floor here.
Is it working? So you're basically saying that the loss of electricity would be as dangerous as the loss of life if there were a radioactive release? That wasn't my question. I have another question, but could you answer that?
No. The loss of electricity would happen in both cases, so that consequence would be the same. However, the consequence of a terrorist attack at a solar, wind, or wave generation facility would be less than at a nuclear power plant.
Could you rate how significant you would think that the difference would be with a radioactivity release? I don't know what level it would be, but even during an earthquake or a terrorist attack, the issue of the safety of that radiation being released and having to evacuate this county or how wide the area would be, I'd like to know that comparison.
I couldn't provide that comparison.
Okay. My concern is that I drive a 1963 Volkswagen, and it's getting to be a little scary because I've got metal fatigue. We could do wind, we could do wave generation, and you can do solar energy at that same location. You have the space to do it. It could be co-generating within 5 years if we could actually look at the safety issues and consider that we need to phase out this plant at least. If somebody wants to build another one, that's a different issue. But this plant, I think, is getting too old to be safe.
So your question basically is asking about the aging. How is there assurance that the plant is not wearing out to the point where it's unsafe?
We have, during our review of the application, we'll look at what the applicant has proposed for aging management programs for the piping and the concrete structures and that, and ensure that they have a program in place that will monitor and, if needed, repair the condition of the valves or the concrete walls.
If
I could, I'd like to add on to that. The you've heard us say at least a couple of times, there's the license renewal application is a little bit different. It's kind of separate from the current requirements that go with having a reactor plant. And so all of the requirements that currently exist for the plant while it's within its design 40-year life will continue through any extended period of operation. The license renewal application will add on a bunch of requirements that go look at aging to go just like your car, like your car analogy, because I used the same thing this afternoon. As your car gets older, you're going to do different things to keep your car going. You're going to find things that you didn't have problems with before when it was new. And so the license renewal application has to address a very long list of NRC requirements for how are you going to pay attention to problems that you didn't have before but other plants that are older than you may have had. How are you going to go look for problems that you haven't experienced but are susceptible because of the type of materials, the environment being close to the coast, things like that. And so what it is it adds on a bunch of extra requirements to go make sure that they're aware of those things. It also involves a study of all of the problems they've had that are documented in their corrective action program. And in addition to the licensee reviewing those and looking for issues that are early signs of aging, the two audits that are done as part of the license renewal application and the inspection that my group will do, do an exhaustive search of their corrective action program looking for aging issues so we know whether or not the scope of the license renewal application has covered not only their site issues but also issues that have been experienced by plants with similar designs that are older already.
Got a question? Go ahead.
Just if I could just follow up on that. I guess we're not supposed to follow up. The current licensing basis for the plant, the current regulations require a fairly exhaustive test and inspection program of critical systems. So, you know, does a valve function as it needs to as it was new? If it doesn't, it's repaired or replaced. The reactor vessel has a very extensive 10-year inspection program where non-destructive technologies are used to look for any types of cracking or age-related degradation, and if it's found, it's repaired. Piping systems are exhaustively
here. I think so. Okay. Thank you. Good evening, David Weissman, Alliance.
That's better. Nice.
Good evening, David Weissman, Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. You know, I'm going to follow up on the car metaphor. I like it. I'll stop with just first a quick bit of housekeeping. Earlier, for those who are in the afternoon session, someone had asked a question that involved the reprocessing of radioactive spent fuel, and the answer given was it was stopped by Jimmy Carter, and that there was the possibility of reprocessing again today. Just, again, I've set this record straight a couple of times in these meetings. Reprocessing, the moratorium on reprocessing was signed into law by Gerald Ford in the last month of his administration. So I know Jimmy Carter gets tagged with this, but a little NRC history for you. It was Gerald Ford that did that. And two, your own Commissioner Yasko, in a speech given in Arizona 2 weeks ago, said, among the many myths of nuclear power are the myth of reprocessing as experienced by the French. This is, of course, untrue and leads to greater creation of waste and is one of the mythologies of nuclear power. That was Chairman Yasko at a speech in Arizona 2 weeks ago, to point that out. Now, let's follow up on the car metaphor. I like that a lot. Here's the question. How many people in the audience, this question for you, understand the motivating factor, or shall I say the informed part of the decision as to why there is a concern over seismicity? And this goes to the question as well on... what would happen if you lost this much power? In this case, it was a terrorist event. What would happen if you lost that? How many people understand what is the motivating event of the last 2 years that do that? Are you aware that there is actually a seismic event that drives this? Yeah? That on July 16th, 2007, a magnitude 6.8 earthquake struck the Kashiwa Zaka reactor in Japan on the Chietsu coast in the Niigata prefecture. I forgive my pronunciation. I'm only good at ordering tekamaki and tuna rolls. But that is what happened. In 90 seconds, the world's largest nuclear reactor, 8,000 megawatts, shut down. Some hailed it as a success. The reactor shut down with only a spillage of 600 gallons of radioactive water into the Sea of Japan. Less successful than the shutdown have been the 2-year and 6-month attempts to restart the reactor. It took 2 years and 6 months to restart 2 of the units, and according to our assemblyman, Dr. Blakesley, who's done the research on this as a PhD seismologist, the estimated cost to the Japanese public is $12.1 billion. Now it turns out that TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, which knew about this fault as early as 1981, chose not to investigate it. When they looked again in 2001, they thought the seismic significance was insignificant, and therefore it required no further review. When someone asks, what happens if you lose a lot of generation all at one time? That is the motivating economic and reliability concern here, and that is why the state has asked for these studies to be done. The state had said to PG&E, as part of your request for funding to do this, you must bring before us a full study of the Assembly Bill 1632 seismic advanced technique seismic studies before we, the California Public Utilities Commission, will allow you the permission to go ahead and ask for this. So the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility and other groups said, you know, we somehow think this feasibility study is actually nothing more than the application without the signature, the stamp, and the envelope. And that's actually recorded in the judge's decision. Well, I have it in my hand, and these are questions for, is Dr. Kammerer still on the phone? Here's the actual page, seismicity. Now, on November 14th, Toyota notified the U.S. Department of Safety that preliminary results from an ongoing study indicated there was a fault. Let me skip ahead a paragraph. Give me 2 minutes. 2 minutes. And we're going to stop the camera.
Is there a question, David?
Yeah, it is at the end of the thing. PG&E and its NRC staff, this is the application, folks. This is the analysis. PG&E informed the NRC staff that it had, my emphasis, performed an initial evaluation of the potential ground motion levels at the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. Toyota informed the U.S. Department of Transportation it had performed an initial evaluation of the brake systems on the Toyota Prius. Next paragraph. The NRC undertook a, my emphasis, preliminary independent review of the possible implications of the shoreline fault. The Department of Transportation undertook a preliminary independent review of the safety of the Toyota brakes. Next paragraph. Considering the results of the deterministic analysis as a whole, and my emphasis, the current levels of uncertainty, the NRC staff concludes that the postulated shoreline fault will not likely cause ground motions that exceed those for which the Diablo Canyon has been analyzed. Considering the results of a deterministic analysis as a whole and the current level of uncertainty, the Department of Transportation concludes the brakes in the Toyota Prius are not likely to cause any malfunction. And in the final paragraph, although the presence of shoreline fault in information is new information, based on this assessment, it is not significant information, and thus the components are not expected. Dr. Kammerer, if this was a car you were going to buy, and the safety report included preliminary results, initial analysis, preliminary review, current level of uncertainty, and new information, how then can you, in any sense of finality, because there's not a final or conclusive word in here, assume that the questions have been answered?
Okay, well, why don't I start with the second question first and then get to the Kashiwazaki Kariwa plant, which there was some mischaracterization that happened in terms of that. First of all, in terms of the shoreline fault and the preliminary nature of the work, this is on top of a large body of earlier work that was done. And I want to point out that there is a research information letter 09001, which is available, publicly available on the NRC website.
Pardon me, I apologize. Please, there was a little...
I apologize.
There was a small interruption here at the podium, and I missed that last two sentences. I apologize.
It's a research information letter 09001. There's an ML number, which you can pull it up with. It's ML09033052. This is the document, a document which I wrote based on analysis that I personally did for the preliminary determination and analysis of the shoreline fault. And basically, what I did when I was undertaking this work, and it's all detailed in this research information letter, parameter that went into the analysis is described, the values that I used, and the reason that I chose those sets of parameters based on the preliminary information, or even go through and redo the numbers and see, you know, and verify the numbers. So I think that, first of all, to start out with, if anyone wants to look at the basis for our assessment, you can look there. And I have full technical and intellectual responsibility for that document. So if someone can specifically point to a technical issue, I'm happy to hear it. And we specifically made it public so that it was completely transparent upon which that it's based. So that's one thing. We have enough information to perform deterministic analyses, which are basically analyses which are based on a scenario, a worst-case scenario, for both the shoreline fault as well as the Hodgegrave fault, which was previously done. Both of those analyses have been done personally by me, and when you look at the shaking levels that are produced by either of those faults, they are lower than the shaking levels to which the plant has been assessed. Now, moving forward, can I finish responding to the question? Then we're going to be getting a large volume of additional information. We're currently reviewing that on an ongoing basis as it's coming in. And if at any point I see something inconsistent with the current tectonic framework, the current seismic regional model upon which we're working, I will immediately raise that as a potential issue. As the data continues to come in, what we're going to be doing is developing a broad regional independent seismic model for the region. There was a discussion earlier about the USGS, and we are in discussions of working with the USGS, the mapping group, on exactly that endeavor, because they're very interested in the data too, and it'll be useful for the national hazard maps. And you know, we'd like for our independent model and the model that goes into the maps which feed into the building code to be similar. But that doesn't prevent us from gaining a lot of information from that data now. When I use the word preliminary, what I want to indicate is not that somehow it's so lacking that we can't do an assessment. It's that I want to make it clear that we will continue to review this data on an ongoing basis. We will continue to assess all of the new information as it comes. And ultimately, when we get the final sets of data and we develop our final model and we do all of both of the deterministic analysis and finalize that, which is probably going to be very, very close to what you see already and is publicly available already, and the results from the probabilistic study, that will also be made a public document. At least that's my intention, so that anybody can look at our analysis, fully understand it, make comments in terms of the technical basis of it, redo the numerical calculations that I do, and provide any input. So just because it's preliminary doesn't mean there's no information there. There's a lot of information there. And the second point, I've actually been to the Kashiwazaki-Kariwa plant on two occasions with the International Atomic Energy Agency, including a few months after the event, and I've seen the results of that earthquake firsthand. And we started analyzing the data as soon as it was received, and that's different from what happened in Japan.
All right, I'm getting the signal to split here, but I still don't know where the phrase current level, when is the phrase current level of uncertainty revised to say with degree of surety?
In the seismic hazard world, current degree of uncertainty doesn't ever change because it's a technical term.
A technical term.
Thank you, David.
Well, I get the HEFO. Just
There's always a characterization of uncertainty. It's something that we must do. It's part of good practice in the seismic hazard world is to look at both your median values, your range of values, and your characterization of uncertainty.
And thank you, Annie.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. Thanks very much. So just to remind you that our statement has always been that these... Oh, by the way, I didn't ask what the date was on your long-term seismic update. Was there a final date on when you anticipate having that closure?
Sorry, I went back on mute.
Dr. Cameron.
David, we need to get to some of the other folks who have been waiting.
Guys, come. It's www.a4nr.org, Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. All the documents for the PUC are posted on the website, as well as the seismic update.
Thank you, David. I want to get to the lady who's been waiting patiently in the back.
I've got her, Bill, and then we can get back to the cards. Please, if you could stand up so we can make sure we get you on camera.
Thank you. Okay. I wonder, what is the deadline? What would have been the deadline for the application of PG&E to get a new license for Diablo? How long did they have to apply for a license?
Most licensees apply at least 5 years before their license is run out, because NRC has a provision called timely renewal, where if they apply at least 5 years in advance of their license expiring, they're allowed to continue operating until the NRC completes their review, should the staff review take more than 5 years. So typically, licensees apply between that 20-year and 5-year left period.
Okay, so here, this is 2010, right? And they expire in 2024 and 2025. So they had till 2019 and 2020 actually to reapply. Now, okay, I'm going to make an analogy, a personal analogy. My driver's license expires in 2012. But I am not allowed to go and apply for my new driver's license now, because there's a possibility that by 2012 I could be blind, or I could be disabled, I could be unable to drive a car. I think that there is a very strong analogy between this preemptive application for a renewal of the license by PG&E, because they knew that the new seismic studies, because they wanted to jump the gun, be able to get an early approval of relicensure before all the data is in. And you've told us that seismic issues, emergency planning, licensure. Does this mean that if the state finds that the water consumption of 2 billion gallons a day that Diablo takes through their intake and spits out the other side, if the state finds that inconsistent with our environmental planning goals, would that mean the state could say, this plant cannot be relicensed? Or can you say to the state, we said they can be relicensed. You really don't have any authority over that. Those are my questions.
I'm going to answer the last question that you posed there about the state and water discharge or consumption, for example. In that case, if the state said that the licensee, or PG&E in this case, couldn't continue to use water the way it currently does, the power plant couldn't continue to operate. It needs that level of throughput to keep an operating reactor cool. So it would have to go into some other capacity other than operating to produce electricity. So it would have that functional effect whenever the state were to make that determination. So that's part of the state's oversight that really can engage on how the power plant operates or doesn't operate. I know there were a couple of other parts there. Is there any one of those anybody else wants to take a shot at?
I'd just like to clarify. In your statement, you mentioned that seismic, emergency preparedness, and security, were not looked at in license renewal, and that's correct, but it's not because it's under the state's purview. It's because we have ongoing programs that are looking at that, and so it's not a duplication of our effort in those areas.
There's actually one other part of your question that I recall now that I'd also like to respond to. You had brought up some issues like water consumption being entirely outside the scope of NRC's review. In terms of the oversight for that particular issue, that's a state-level oversight, but at the same time, in our environmental impact statement, we do have some issues related to the use of cooling water that do fall into our assessment of issues. We'll be looking at the impacts from once through cooling to aquatic organisms. in terms of impingement against the plant intake screens, entrainment through the plant, and thermal discharge from the plant itself. I just recall that was another part of your question.
What I really want you to address is about this application for the renewal of the license in 2010, approved by you, and going to be, and looking at your data for your calendar for approval, that your approval is going to you're going to give your approval in 2011, when the state's energy, what's it called? The Energy Commission report and all that are not going to be finished till 2013. Why can't you say to PG&E, well, hang on here, let's wait, give us some time. Why can't you say, give us your application in 2015 or 2016? You'll have plenty of time for it then. Why couldn't you do that? Why did you? I don't get it. I don't think that you.
Based on the regulations as put forth by NRC, once they've operated for at least 20 years, they're allowed to come in. When specifically they come in is up to the licensee, as the rules have been established. That rulemaking process was open to public input, and was something the NRC took out to the public in the mid-1990s. I certainly understand your concern, and it's a concern we've heard before in this area. Also, as I mentioned to Rochelle Becker when she was up here earlier, there are a couple of letters into the commission at this point related to asking the commission to pause or hold off the license renewal review until those studies are in. We're going to be in the process of the commission, not necessarily us personally, but the commission will be in the process of putting together a response to that letter and deciding what to do. So there is part of that there is a process to consider right now. So I certainly understand your sentiment.
Let's take one more question from a lady.
Let me add just one thing to that. In the event that a license is renewed and new information comes up in our oversight process, you know, the agency can take action on that information, and that doesn't guarantee that the plant's going to continue to operate. You know, they have the license, but if they're not meeting our rules and regulations, then we can shut them down.
One more question, then we'll take a break.
My question is, did any of you, like I did, watch the TV news on Haiti and think how horrible that was, and then to think, how would it be if that happened here to us with a radioactive release in addition? And it's really hard to superimpose that on it, but nobody could escape. Because if the earthquake didn't get you and you couldn't get up and move, the radioactivity would. And I'm just wondering if you think in those terms at all, because that's what we think about. And I really would like an answer to that, a personal answer. And also, I don't want to, we're working on it kind of an answer that won't be acceptable.
I can answer that.
Please do.
I can. I think that anybody that watches something unfold like we saw in Haiti can't help but think about how awful it is. I mean, you'd be unhuman not to. And I'm from Northern California. I'm actually from the Bay Area. And the reason that I'm in this field is because I was at the top of 3 Embarcadero on the 28th floor in the Loma Prieta earthquake. And I walked home down Market Street and then down Mission Street to where I lived and saw firsthand the devastation that an earthquake can cause. And after that, then I went to City College of San Francisco and got an AS degree and then went to Berkeley and got a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in seismic hazards and earthquake engineering, specifically because I felt like that was something I could do with my life that was worthwhile of it. Is once you know that hazard exists, putting building codes in place to protect, to make sure that the buildings are built to at least life safety. And for critical facilities, to build structures, to use the most modern tools, to make sure that everything is far beyond life safety, to the high, high level of performance that one expects and that's consistent with the importance of those types of facilities. So, you know, this is probably, I don't know, my fifth or sixth public meeting. And part of why I got into this field was because of growing up in a seismic region in Northern California. And one of the reasons that I wanted to be involved in the review and when this new fault came up, I sort of jumped up to do this work was because as a Northern Californian, I've seen the whole Diablo Canyon story. And from the public perspective, you know, I was it's only been the last 3 years that I've actually been at the NRC. Before that, I was a member of the public like you. I was a PG&E ratepayer like you living in San Francisco. And so I think there's a lot of people at the NRC that are driven by exactly the kinds of things that we saw. And that's what got us into our fields.
Okay. I said we would take a break at 9 o'clock by my new Timex watch that I bought today. It's 9:05. If everybody would be back at 9:15, I'd appreciate it. I'm sorry?
I'd like to ask a question.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a question that is related to my opening remarks. And as I mentioned before, we had some other folks here in the audience who were able to answer questions more effectively than NRC folks for certain topics, such as emergency planning. And in my opening remarks, I talked about what to do in case of a fire alarm. The question reads as follows. It was mentioned that if we hear a fire alarm, you go out to the parking lot. Well, what should we do if we hear a siren? Do you have a supply of KI for us? And I've got Mr. Ron Alsop here, and Ron's willing to field that question.
Thank you. First off, for the siren question, if we hear an early warning system siren go off, that simply means something's going on that requires your attention and to tune in to a local television station, if they're broadcasting the information, to find out what's going on and what protective action that you need to take. It's simply that it's a warning. As we say, it's a warning system. Hey, something's happening. Go find out what's happening so you will know how to respond. As far as the potassium iodide, it's being made available. It has been for a few months now. We call it a pre-distribution program. If we do an evacuation, there will be no potassium iodide distributed in any evacuation point. As many of you know, it only protects the thyroid, which is important to protect from any effects of radiation. And the second thing is it must be taken within a few hours. So we do provide a program. Some states do not do this, by the way, or some local agencies don't do this, by the way, that have nuclear power plants. But we have potassium iodide available for you for free at local participating pharmacies and also at the county public health department locations throughout the county. And that process is actually courtesy of the NRC, made an offer to the states to provide potassium iodide for the population within the 10-mile emergency planning zones, which is the standard federal emergency planning zone in the nation, is 10 miles around a power plant. As many of you know, probably all of you in this room know, the Diablo Canyon emergency planning zone is about 2.5 times that big. So we were provided, in this case, it's 10,000 boxes of 20 child doses each, so 10 10 kid doses each, children's doses each, for the 10-mile emergency planning zone. And then the state of California purchased another 10,000 box supply for the rest of the emergency planning zone. So far, about 3,000 boxes or 7,000 boxes have been distributed, as I understand it. So there's plenty more available. To get that, in the AT&T, the San Luis Obispo County edition of the AT&T telephone book, October 2009 edition, and the smart coupon pages are actually coupons for it. So check it out in the AT&T phone book. You can also get a coupon for the potassium iodide from the county public health website. I won't blab out a website address, but the easiest thing to do to find that coupon is simply do a web search for San Luis Obispo County, county government. When you find that, go to the emergency services under departments. And on our main homepage in the Office of Emergency Services for the county is a link that'll get you the coupon that you can take to a pharmacy or public health for a coupon for potassium iodide for your family. And again, that's just do a search, simple web search for county, San Luis Obispo County, go to the departments, find emergency services, and the link is there.
Thank you, Ron. Not specifically related to license renewal, but important information nevertheless. I'm going to turn it back over to the panel to start reading some of the information from the cards, because we've got a number of cards that have not yet been addressed.
I have a question here and asks, when built, what was the expected life of Diablo Canyon? The expected life of all nuclear power plants when they were originally designed and constructed was 40 years. That was based on economic and antitrust considerations. Second question is, has this expected life changed since the plant opened? If so, why? Since the when plants were originally licensed, the life of the plant was based on economic and antitrust factors. It was later determined after plants operated that they could potentially safely operate for longer than 40 years. So the NRC developed a license renewal rule to allow plants to extend the life by...
Should the license be renewed? And the other question was, what role does the review of the plant safety record play in the renewal process? The answer to both is that the license renewal process is really about plant equipment, and that the current operating license and the NRC's inspection process are built around assuring plant safety. Right now, both Diablo Canyon units are operating at what we call a licensee response column, which is the highest level of safety performance. All of the NRC measures for safety show very low safety significance. The plant safety performance is not really a specific attribute for license renewal because it's already being carried in the current operating license. And again, all the current operating license conditions continue to apply even if they get approved for an additional 20 years. All the license renewal process does is add extra requirements on top of those.
I have a question from Joe from Pasco Robles. As the facility was built and licensed in 1984, what plans, if any, are in place to upgrade the facility to current technology, as would be in facilities requiring a new license? And this is really two questions, but I'd like to answer the first question first. At Diablo Canyon, as is in most commercial nuclear power plants, there's a plant health committee, an organization called Plant Health Committee, and a plant review committee. And what this health committee does is it monitors, we call it the system health, but the functionality and the effectiveness of plant systems and how those systems may be affected as they age. And as a result of that, they prioritize those systems for upgrades and retrofits and that type of thing. And so there's parts of the plant that's being continuously being refitted. You've heard in the press some of the more visible retrofits. Talked about steam generator replacement and reactor head replacement. But just real briefly, I'll talk about a fairly significant protection system. A certain solid-state protection system was included in the plant in 1984. As part of this upgrade process, it was completely replaced and modernized in mid-1990s. Now PG&E is in the process of changing it to a complete digital upgrade to reflect modern technology. So it's a continuation of upgrading the plant over time. The second part of the question is, talking about upgrading to requirements of a new license. And this is kind of an apple and orange type question, because when we licensed Diablo Canyon and plants like that, we had specific requirements that licensees had to meet in order to meet that license. And we do have a process. It's called the backfit rule. And if there's a modification that shows a cost benefit to safety, we have a process where we can impose those modifications on plant licensees like Diablo Canyon. But we don't apply the new license plants. It's an apples and oranges kind of situation.
Question is, what issues could or have for answered earlier to date all applications that have been submitted to the NRC for license renewal have been approved, with the exception of three, which are currently in a hearing process right now, and the outcome of that is yet to be determined. But I'm going to let Drew answer on the environmental side as to why or what issues could prevent license renewal from being renewed.
As Kim mentioned, hearing processes can certainly hold up a license renewal decision. Also, as I mentioned in the slideshow, there are two elements of state-level determination that would have to occur before NRC could take action to renew a license. Those are the Clean Water Act consistency certification on the state's part. Also, the federal consistency determination as part of the Coastal Zone Management Act that the California Coastal Commission would have to issue before we could take the action of renewing a license. So there are some other elements that can also affect how or whether NRC could issue a renewed license.
I have a question on how long can backup power last if the plant stopped functioning due to an earthquake? NRC requires that power plants have, as part of their critical safety systems, on-site power available. At Diablo Canyon, the on-site source is emergency diesel generators, and they actually exceed the number of diesel generators that we would require. But their standard requirement is 7 days' worth of fuel for all of those emergency diesels, which is deemed to be enough time to be able to get additional fuel in.
I have a couple of questions here related to alternatives to license renewal in the context of the environmental review. The first one is, can you elaborate on the process of evaluating the alternatives to generation should the license be denied? It goes on to say, how do you evaluate the replacement of 2,200 megawatts of generation and need for reliability of power in California? In short, our process starts by looking at what means of generating electricity are currently available or likely to be available by the time the license expires in a capacity large enough to replace a power plant. We'll also be looking at either standalone alternatives that can replace the power or in some cases combinations of alternatives that could also serve to replace the power. So that may mean, in some cases, some elements that couldn't on their own replace the power, we may look at in concert with other means of generation. So we do look at having that capacity replacement as well as serving the same duty cycle or the base load availability, kind of the run all the time that or most of the time that the power plant currently does. The next question was has to do with how does nuclear power compare against solar and wind power for cost and environmental impact? At least for the environmental impact side, that's going to be a big part of our analysis of alternatives. Is going to be looking at how do things like solar or wind power compare in environmental impacts. Provided we get past the first hurdle of are they available in sufficient size and can they replace the capacity of that power plant and run most of the time. So some of those things, like, for example, solar power might not do it on its own. We may look at it in concert with some other alternatives to make what type of electricity generation to implement. The NRC wouldn't do a poll like that. When it comes down to how will you generate electricity and what will you build, it's ultimately a decision that's up to the utility and the Utilities Commission and any other oversight bodies. So it might be interesting to do that poll, but it wouldn't serve the NRC's review purposes for us to do that poll.
They have a couple of operational questions here. How long can the spent fuel pool, storage tanks, keep the rods cool without electrical power? And the answer to that is really indefinitely. The safety analysis for the Diablo Canyon spent fuel pool doesn't rely on pumps and heat exchangers and that for long-term cooling. It uses evaporative cooling. It's a very, very large pool. How long before backup systems can no longer function? And this is a very similar question. Diesel power comes on within about 15 seconds or so when off-site power is lost. So for example, in an earthquake, the power lines, power through the off-site grid may become interrupted. And the diesels can run essentially indefinitely, but they only have about a five-day on-site fuel supply. And that's assuming a large load. If you think about it, initially the loading for the diesels would be quite high, but after 3 or 4 hours after shutdown, the amount of electrical loading decreases considerably, which extends the fuel supply in practice beyond that 7 days. And the last part of the question is, what backup systems exist to keep the spent fuel rod storage tanks cool in case of an incident, an attack, or an earthquake, et cetera? After the 9/11 attacks, the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in conjunction with several national laboratories and other government agencies, did fairly exhaustive studies on the effect of a terrorist attack on a nuclear power plant. Out of the result of these studies came a number of what we call security orders, which required very specific plant-specific assessments and mitigative capabilities to be established in order to deal with the potential terrorist attack on a spent fuel pool. This includes specialized equipment to be procured and stored on site, as well as special training to plant operators to implement these mitigative strategies. And then as inspectors, I know I've personally gone through and inspected these procedures and equipment to make sure that they're in place.
Question is, how often is Diablo Canyon or at least one reactor brought down for maintenance? The Diablo Canyon power plants operate on about a 22-month operating cycle for refueling, and occasionally they will take a maintenance outage if they need to or if ocean conditions require power reductions. How much spent fuel storage is left? How many years before the storage facility is full? The Diablo Canyon Independent Spent Fuel Storage Facility is licensed for 140 casks, and there's currently 8 casks.
If you deny an extension of the licenses by PG&E at the end of this 30-month process, will that be the end of the plant in 2024 or 2025, or will they be allowed to apply again? Actually, this is a hypothetical that we really don't know the answer to, other than we can tell you that the rule does not prohibit the amount of times an applicant can come in and request license renewal. There are plants right now that have already had their licenses renewed, and if they chose right now, they could come back in and seek another additional 20 years of operating time. We'd also have the person's name on here. We'd like to get back to you because this is a question I'd also like to ask of our attorneys to make sure that I've answered correctly and that there's no prohibition on the rule about how many times a licensee can apply for renewal.
I have a question from the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, specifically about the power plant was built on a sacred Native American Chumash site. It's Chumash people. We have lost a sacred site. What weight will cultural resources play in the renewal process? It's a site-specific issue for the environmental review. So we'll actually be in touch actually with your tribal government during the course of the scoping process to get some input on that and any concerns also. The applicant has identified, or PG&E has identified, a number of significant archaeological areas on its site as part of its application. So we'll be looking at that when we go through our license renewal environmental review. So it is something that is important to us as we conduct the review. Another question that I have related to I'm sorry. The mic's behind you.
Fred Collins, Tribal Administrator, Northern Chumash Tribal Council. I wanted to ask you directly, how do you understand, what is your process for understanding Native American concerns? You know, I've heard a lot about public safety, and I've heard a lot about a lot of technical issues. For us, those are very important, of course. But we also stand in a spiritual stance, and I haven't heard anything about you understanding how we feel. Now, here in San Luis Obispo County, we engage in a meaningful way with the local government. SB 18, which is a state-recognized bill that was passed here in 2005, allows for state-recognized tribal governments to engage in a meaningful way with local government. How do you folks handle that process?
To start with, we typically begin the process by sending out specific letters requesting input from tribal governments about any significant resources that may exist in the area or significant concerns they may have. So that's a first step. We're in the process of putting those together right now. During the environmental scoping process, we'd invite your government or representatives to send whatever input you'd like to have into our process to us. If you'd like to arrange for some kinds of meetings between NRC officials and your tribal government, we can work that out too. We're interested in hearing more about your concern.
My family's culture. And now we are a very organized entity and a responsible authority here in San Luis Obispo County, and we really want to engage in a way that allows you to see how we feel spiritually and how the plant affects our cosmology. Because even though, you know, you have a containment out there, we feel that there's a lot of other things going on besides just, you know, the containment of nuclear reaction material. For us, you know, explaining to you on a physics level, you know, you have string theory. We adhere to these types of things. When one thing affects one area, there's something else that happens in another area. So the thermodynamics and the string theories of quantum physics really explain a lot of our spiritual things that we adhere to, because it's unseen, you don't see it, and it's happening, though. And for us, if you're a warrior on the trail and you see signs of a bear, you take caution. But when you see signs of two bears, you get out of the area. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Drew, do you need any additional contact information?
He actually gave me contact information on his card, so I think this will be a good start. I do. Thank you very much. I'm glad you could come out tonight.
Drew, can we take a quick one from the audience?
Please.
I think she was working off of a previous question.
Yeah, you were with reference to the relicensing. I thought in the beginning we were told that the plant is made for 40 years, but you can relicense it for another 20. And then, Kim, you said, well, that can be done again and again and again, but I thought there was a limiting factor in there.
There are some limitations to how long a plant can operate, and that's mostly driven by the reactor vessel and how long it can exist without exceeding certain parameters that are described in other regulations in Part 50. So there are some limitations, but it depends on the plant. As far as the license renewal rule goes, it does not limit the number of times a plant can come in and request a license renewal. The NRC is looking at, you might even see or hear about life beyond 60, because right now plants are coming in and requesting an additional 20 years of operation. We're not even really entirely sure how long a vessel will actually last. Could they go to 80 years? Would there be components within the plant that would be would they have to be replaced in order to exist for another 20 years of operation beyond the 20 years that they're requesting right now? So there are some limitations, but the rule itself is not limiting. Does that make sense? Okay.
I actually have one more question on that's related to the environmental scope of the review. The question is, will the economic impact of license renewal be calculated? There's not a specific calculation of the economic impact of license renewal, but there are a number of elements that we do look at related to economic impacts.
To him, and we'll get to you, but I want to take him in the order that we've received them.
Hi, thank you for being here. And are any of you against nuclear energy?
I actually, in my last job, I actually worked for a small nonprofit group that intervened in utility proceedings in North Carolina, and we had alleged that the utilities in that case had not relied sufficiently on things like energy efficiency and renewable energy. So I come to this bringing a pretty healthy dose of skepticism about how you generate electricity. And I take it pretty seriously in the environmental review context that we really look at the alternatives to license renewal. As far as my own views on it, I'm relatively agnostic but really open-minded about where we go from here in terms of energy policy. That's not my specific job on the commission, but from a personal perspective, I think there are a lot of alternatives available.
Anybody else want to weigh in?
Being a degreed nuclear engineer, I'd say that while I am not exactly against nuclear energy, it doesn't disturb me. But I'm not against solar, I'm not against wind, and I'm not against wave generation. So that's me personally, just because that's the field I got a degree in and chose to use as my profession. But it's not my job as a nuclear regulator working for the NRC to promote nuclear energy. That's not what we're here for. We're here to make sure that it's regulated and the plants operate safely.
I guess where I want to go with the question is you're not necessarily for nuclear energy. You're overseeing it. So if there is an issue with a plant, you're going to be willing to step forward and say, hey, we've got an issue with this plant. As you go through the relicensing process, even though your scope is in one area, if you see something, you're going to step forward.
Absolutely. If the any plant cannot comply with the regulations, it's our job as regulators to bring that forth to, you know, the other branches or divisions that are responsible for that. Within the Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation, which the Division of License Renewal is a part of, there is a division that is specifically responsible for the operating licenses of the plants currently. So during the course of license renewal, we identify issues. Even when we go on our audits, if we identify issues that are of current concern, we bring those right to the attention of the resident inspector. So when I come to the audits, if I see something, he'll come to me and he'll ask me, did I see anything, or, you know, did it reveal anything that he should be aware of? So we communicate with other divisions, and it is our job to bring those forth to those who are responsible for that area and make sure that they're aware of any problems that we identify, even during the course of license renewal review.
Like a driver's license, if it's extended out 20 years, but they're violating the regulations for that license, they can be shut down for that at any time.
Absolutely.
So it's not just at relicensing time.
Correct.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jill Zamek with the Mothers for Peace, and I came here tonight specifically to find out about public involvement in this license renewal process. And I didn't get a lot of nuts and bolts about that, but I got kind of some clues. There's this frequently asked questions, and in this, I'm told about all the items that are precluded. Number one, safety. operational issues, security and safeguards, emergency preparedness, et cetera. Oh, spent fuel, disposal and storage. Basically all the things that I'm most concerned about, we can't talk about. And so I was just kind of taking notes as we went along, and it looks like we can't really talk about the new fault, even though I think it's new information, and I thought we could open up new information. But we can only do it through a severe accident scenario and perhaps aging of seismic components. And I'm curious to know what else, perhaps maintenance. I'm not sure if we found some adverse trends. And I think we could talk about cumulative impacts on the marine environment and the thermal discharge. I'm just kind of I'm thinking if the Mothers for Peace is going to intervene in order to make this not a complete sham, you know, are there some real issues? Can we bring up these issues, and what other ones can we bring up?
The issues that you raised about certain aspects that are specifically discussed in the frequently asked questions document that are part of ongoing regulatory oversight, what that really means is there are processes in place for those to be continued to be observed and regulated by the NRC. The license renewal rule focuses on components and structures within the plant that are not necessarily assessed by another regulation within the NRC's purview. It focuses on passive and long-lived components that where aging could present a problem. Security, emergency planning, those are ongoing processes that are assessed by the NRC on a regular basis. That's why they're not reassessed again in license renewal. They will continue to be reassessed by the NRC throughout the entire life of the plant, whether that be 40 years or 60 years if a license is to be is granted, a renewed license is granted. The other part of your question, new and significant information that can be a part of a hearing process if during the review new and significant information is presented. For instance, if the seismic studies revealed that there's some information that the plant needs to go back and address, I think that would be an issue of new and significant information that can be raised through the contention hearing process. If at any time a plant cannot comply with the regulations, the NRC has the authority to shut the plant down. It could be right now. It could be during, if a plant was to receive a renewed license, it could be, you know, 2 years into the renewed period. They have to be able to comply with the regulations and all regulations. And if at any time they cannot do that, the NRC can and will shut them down.
Is Jane next?
Well, I didn't really get an answer because, except for that one, I wanted to know, well, okay, let's just do one at a time. Is the marine environment one that I can write a contention about and might be admitted?
The issues related to aquatic impacts from the 1-3 cooling system are definitely within the scope of license renewal. So that's something that if, depending on what the issue is, it'd be up to the board to decide. It would convene a panel of technical and legal judges who would then decide whether that could be admitted. So we can't, the group here before you can't tell you whether those judges would admit that, but I would say that that's something that's within the scope of the proceedings. So it's something that you know, would at least meet kind of an initial bar for whether it's something you could file a contention on.
And what about adverse trends in the maintenance?
I'm going to have to defer to somebody else on that one. I primarily manage the environmental review. I think Neil's going to come in.
Adverse trends in maintenance and is covered under their current license and the current inspection program and the current reactor assessment program. So, no, that's not a separate license renewal issue, as I understand it. Now, there may be issues that kind of fall under the very broadest use of maintenance that are really aging issues, and those are potentially issues that are license renewal.
Aging issues. So you understand the frustration and the narrow scope that you leave the public with?
Sure.
Again, Jane Swanson, spokesperson, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. I have a short question, totally different than what I brought up this afternoon. I also have something a friend has asked me to read for her because she had to leave. So I'll speak on behalf of Mothers for Peace and then let somebody else speak and ask you to come back to me later, and I'll read my friend's communication. So here's the question from Mothers for Peace. Will the NRC give extra scrutiny to problems identified in NRC inspection reports? Specifically, I have four in mind. So, you know, again, since the scoping is narrow, as my friend Jill just was frustrated about, I'm wanting to know if you're going to give extra attention to these matters, even if we don't bring it up in a contention. Number one, problem identification. PG&E is not meeting industry standards in identifying and resolving problems in a timely way. So will that get extra scrutiny? Number two, inadequate 50.59 evaluations, meaning that PG&E is making changes in procedures without first getting NRC approval and apparently not even being aware that approval is needed. Okay, I got two more, but I'll wait.
Okay, you guys want to address these two, and then we'll get to her last two?
As you pointed out, those are our current inspection issues. They're covered under the current license and the current inspection program. But part of the license renewal application review process includes two site audits and a site inspection, which is we draw the distinction because the inspection is done by my group, the inspector group from the Arlington, Texas area. And so we have some independence on those types of reviews. But all three of those reviews involve extensive reviews of the corrective action program, including how effective the corrective action program is. And with regards to the maintenance, we look in a corrective action program looking for abnormal maintenance requirements and things like that, failures that were between the expected lifetimes and things like that. So we can pick out aging issues that are really being misdiagnosed to make sure they get addressed within the aging management processes. So those are probably not very good contentions for a license renewal hearing, but they are covered under the current inspection process.
Okay, so two others. Number three, violations of seismic design related to Unit 2 replacement reactor head modification. I'm guessing your answer is going to be the same, that it's an ongoing thing. Is that correct, before I go to number four?
Yes, that's the same. Although the reactor head replacement was undertaken partially as an aging management kind of issue, so that's taking an old irradiated head and replacing it with something with better material and new material.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jane.
Yes.
I'll just add, the reactor vessel head is a component that is within the scope of license renewal, so they have to adequately manage aging of the vessel head for the life of the plant. So it is within the scope. It is a component that we do look at in license renewal.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And the last one is the unresolved questions about the adequacy of the 230 kV preferred offsite power system, which raises questions about adequate power to the plant in the event of human or mechanical failure or sabotage that might take the Diablo reactors offline. And in your response, please tell me if I do correctly understand the significance of this offsite power system problem. I just summarized my understanding of it, but if I'm off, I'd like to be corrected.
I'm knowledgeable of that particular issue, but I don't know the context to license renewal.
So you can tell me if my understanding of that issue is correct or not correct, and then they can tell me if it's
within the scope.
Well, the issue is really goes back to licensing basis. There were some changes made in the late 90s that should have required prior NRC approval. That approval wasn't gotten by the Pacific Gas and Electric. They did some modifications to the switchyard, which left some questions on whether or not the offsite power system was adequately sized. This is an unresolved issue. It's unresolved currently for under two questions. The first question is whether or not had the modification been successful, could it have led to a case where adequate offsite power would not have been available for a period of time. The second question is, we call it a 50.9 issue, whether or not there's a question on whether or not PG&E had provided complete and accurate information regarding a license amendment request in the 90s and also related to a tech spec interpretation this past year. And that process is going through our enforcement evaluation to determine if we need to take additional action on that.
Can I try and simplify that answer? I understand what he's talking about.
Yes, I appreciate the background on that.
Diablo Canyon has a pretty fair number of offsite power lines with a lot of capacity. And it's mostly built to put power out onto the grid. But before you can get a license, you have to prove to the NRC that you're able to get power back so that you don't need those emergency diesel generators that we were talking about. But if you did, the emergency diesels are available. Well, what Michael's talking about is an issue that required a substantial amount of review on his part to go find out what the capability was, not of the power lines, but the last transformer that comes in and takes that very high voltage and puts it down to something that the plant can use. Under certain maintenance configurations, there's a transformer that may not be able to supply both units, right?
Well,
really simple.
Yeah.
Okay. And whether or not it could or couldn't, under the most limiting conditions, we're talking the absolute worst day you can imagine, that transformer may not be able to supply both units at the same time if that was the only transformer they had. It's not normally the only transformer they had. So it's an issue that is really doesn't come into play very often. I think it's only come up once or twice in recent history.
Yeah, we're talking.
It's a technical question. It's not a license renewal kind of question. It's anytime you put yourself in that maintenance configuration, they're on notice that they need to have provided enough information to us to show it is capable under those limiting circumstances, and they will not put themselves in that condition until they prove it to us.
Okay, that's not the answers I wanted, but thank you for the true answers. Appreciate it.
We are at 10 o'clock. Well, we have a couple people who wanted to get some questions in.
I'm just going to answer her. She wanted to know if it was in the scope of license renewal. As I recall, I think when I was reading through the application, I do think it's within the scope of license renewal. I do have a copy of the application here, and after the meeting, I can check and tell you for certain whether or not they've included it within the scope of license renewal.
Okay, we have a question over here.
Okay, I'm June Cochran. One question I have is that if this plant were new and it was going to be licensed on this property, would you approve it because of the seismic issues? Could it be approved as a new plant based on NRC regulations?
I can't answer that with any certainty because I haven't gone through the licensing process for a plant for initial construction and operation. We can certainly try to find out the answer to that question and get back to you if you leave us your contact information.
The information that I got was at another meeting of the NRC was that it could not be today. And if that's the case, and it does come back that way, I don't understand how it can be relicensed. Okay, that's one issue. The next issue is that James Boyd, who's the vice chairman of the California Energy Commission, called the application premature. He said the company had ignored directions from the Energy Commission and the Public Utilities Commission to conduct a thorough study of the economic and environmental costs and benefits of an extension before seeking one. They want all reports in before the license renewal, and I urge you to meet with your California counterpart and hammer this out before you make the license renewal. That's the next issue. The other issue that I was concerned about is kind of piggybacks on these aging factors. I know you've all seen this picture because every time I bring it, this is a corroded pipe, and it was a buried fire water pipe break. This pipe is corroded, and there's several others like that that have been found over the years, and it always shows up in the independent safety committee meetings. And when I asked, what are you going to do about this picture? You know, are you going to go after the other pipes that are this age? They said, well, no, we don't have to do that. We wait until something breaks. That's not acceptable. You know, it's acceptable on a car, perhaps, where one or two people are involved, but it's not on a nuclear plant. And one of the more disturbing things happened on the September 2nd and 3rd meeting. The fire protection program, the whole system is yellow. It's recently downgraded from a healthy white to unhealthy yellow. In June 10th, it may be white, but it's never going to get to green. That's pretty disturbing, and it shows the aging factor is coming about. And if they're just letting this fire protection system age and not do anything about it, what else is happening there that they're not doing anything about? And people keep talking about the corrosion. The seawater does corrode pipes, and it's a natural process, et cetera, et cetera. I just wonder how you're going to assess that in your activities.
Can we take those kind of in series?
Okay, sure.
I guess the first one was a question about the timing of the application. Oh, no, the first question was if the plant was not suitable for licensing initially, what makes it suitable for licensing?
Well, not initially.
For relicensing.
But if it were a new plant on this seismic area, and you always talk about two faults. Actually, there's 12 faults in the area. And I've got a schematic to show that, too, if anybody wants to see it. But, you know, how can it be relicensed when you would never license a plant on this seismic ground?
Can we take that one first?
I have a comment on that, at least to answer half of the question. Maybe someone can take the other half.
Please go ahead.
I'm not sure if I'm still online.
Yeah, you're still online.
Okay. It relates to this and then also a lot of the comments that have been made throughout the meeting. And as you've heard, in terms of the relicensing, the scope is limited, and some of the seismic issues are ongoing issues and are dealt with on an ongoing review basis. And I guess what I want to say is that we are doing that, and I originally came and spoke at a public meeting in Diablo Canyon, I guess it was summer of last year, once we had just issued the public document, the research information letter that I mentioned before, in which we did the initial analysis of the shoreline fault. And I promised at that time that I would keep coming back until the issue was resolved. And as I mentioned, I think this is probably my fifth or sixth meeting. And so we are assessing that information that's coming in an ongoing basis. Now, one of the roles that I had here at the NRC, in fact, one of the first things I was tasked with was acting as project manager for the update of the what's called Reg Guide 1.208, which is our regulatory guidance on how to assess seismic hazard. And so that was the document. I was the project manager that dealt with the issuance, and I was also one of the principal authors on that. And as we go through the assessment of the, of all of the seismic information that's coming in, we're doing that assessment to the most modern standards. So in terms of the seismic hazard, you will get the same state-of-the-art methodology that a new plant would get, and that's something that I'm very committed to, and I will keep coming back as long as I keep getting invited to these public meetings to keep you all updated on exactly how that's going. And as we get a little bit more into that type of analysis, it's going to get fairly complicated to explain, but I'm very committed to coming back and doing that on an ongoing basis. So in terms of the seismic hazard, I want people to feel confident that we are undertaking that work and we are using the most up-to-date standards in terms of that.
I have a follow-up to that, because the last meeting where you were also here by telephone, I brought up the 3D mapping. And you said that you were doing 3D mapping studies. However, PG&E said that they are going to ask the ratepayers to pay, or they're going to go to the PC, to ask them to pay for those 3D mapping studies. And you were going to check in to see what studies they were going to ask to be to pay for, since you've already done them, supposedly. Did you follow up on that?
No. Okay. So let me clarify that a little bit. No, there's been several of these meetings, and we've discussed it multiple times. So I'm not sure exactly which discussion this was. But I did have a question. I guess it was two weeks ago, maybe. Related, and the question was, were we going to have 3D information? And there are multiple methods of getting subsurface information, which provide insight into the seismic structure in a region. So there's ongoing work to try to get the 3D seismic profiling done. And that's moving forward, but we already have other types of 3D mapping that's available to us, and all of these data sets together, because some of these, they work in different frequency ranges, so some of them go deeper, but don't give as clear a picture. Some go shallower and give you a very good picture just right under the surface. All of these different data sets work together. So regardless of the 3D seismic mapping, which is a topic of discussion, we will have additional 3D information. I hope, does that clarify a little bit? We'll have a 3D picture regardless.
So you're going to do everything that PG&E was going to do as well?
We will take the information that's provided by them and do an independent analysis of all of the data that's provided.
So you're going to take the data that PG&E does. Is that what I'm hearing?
The raw data. What is done in seismic hazard study, there's multiple steps. So one is looking at all of the sort of data sets that come in, things like seismic record databases, so all of the seismographic information. There's geophysical data that comes in, so magnetics. There's multi-beam bathymetry. There's sub-bottom profiling. There's all kinds of different data sets which are collected, and some of those are being done by the USGS under the CRADA, the Cooperative Research and Development Agreement, and that's USGS data, and that's public information, so anybody can look at that. They're also doing a whole series of other types of data acquisition. All of that will be made publicly available. So those are basically data sets, and one can take that pull all of that together. Usually it's sort of in a GIS framework so you can see all the data sets cohesively. There's an analysis in terms of what the precision in the data is, and then all of that is used to develop a tectonic model, so a model of where all of those different faults lie, the uncertainty in their location, what kind of magnitudes they're capable of, how often each magnitude occurs. So, for example, the map that you have with the different faults on it, that's basically somebody has taken all of this data and determined where they think all of the faults are. And what we'll do is we'll do a reassessment of all of the data to produce exactly the kind of map that you have, and it will also have information in terms of the magnitudes and the rates and things like that. And that will be an independent model, and that's what we hope to do with the USGS.
Thank you, Dr. Kammerer. We got one other question from the floor.
Hello. Thanks for taking all our questions and the patience. Can't imagine you having to sit through two of these meetings and hanging with the scrutiny. Back to the very first question you answered tonight from a note card about how many relicensing applications have you denied. And I'm gonna make some of these questions easy to answer in a yes or no format for you and everybody else. So essentially, the answer was a bit long, but you said that you have never denied a relicensing application. Is that correct?
Yes, for any that have made it all the way through the process, the decision has been to renew.
And you said that there have been instances where certain applicants haven't provided enough information or pulled their application because of a lack of information, was the word you used. Can you explain what information is?
One of the applications we received, it became apparent during our review. I wasn't working for the NRC at the time, but I was a contractor to the NRC, so my company was involved with the review. It became apparent that the applicant at that time was not in tune with the license renewal rule and what was required of them. And so when it became apparent to the NRC that that was the case, the NRC let them voluntarily take their application back and then resubmit it at a later date and time.
Okay. So there haven't been any applications either pulled or, I guess, obviously not rejected based on safety, public health, or environmental or economic concerns?
I think the answer to that question is correct. Yes, there have not been. Wow. Based on the applications that the NRC has reviewed for which renewed licenses have been granted, in all those cases, the applicants were able to demonstrate that they could adequately manage aging of the components and structures within the plant that meet the intent of the rule. So if they can demonstrate that they can meet the rule, the NRC has a basis to be able to grant a renewed license.
Okay. And I have a business card. The U.S. NRC, protecting people and the environment. Are you aware that, I heard it mentioned earlier, are you aware that many plants in this country are leaking amounts of tritium well above what is considered safe for drinking water?
Yes, we're aware of that, and we do have a buried pipe aging management program that we do look at, and for plants that have operating experience that indicate that they have leaks, you know, we can require and ask them to do more than what's in that our approved generic aging management program. But one thing I'd like to point out, for all the reviews that we have approved, none of them were approved in the format as submitted by the applicant. There were amendments and supplements to every one of those applications to make them, in line with acceptable programs.
Okay. I can appreciate the vast amounts of gray area in these processes. And this question might have some too, but Are you aware that there have been significant amounts of studies proving that tritium and other heavy metals, as well as radiation found throughout the nuclear fuel cycle from uranium mining, shipping, reprocessing and processing, enriching and storage, show incredibly high correlations of causing cancer, birth defects, and other diseases that can be fatal to humans?
I'm aware that numerous studies have been done on cancer rates in and around nuclear power plants. The ones that the states and the NRC has reviewed and looked at, I believe, show no significant increase due to nuclear power plants.
Wow. What were those? Or what?
They're on our website. I can get you a link to all the reports that the agency has looked at and has conducted.
Okay.
We're about 20 minutes over.
I'll check that out. And as I continue, whether or not, you know, the science you've chosen to look at, you know, proves that, I wonder if you honestly believe that radioactive material, uranium mining, other such processes are free of bad health effects to humans, and if you think it is at all in any way conscionable for you to allow plants to either be relicensed or licensed simply by the fact that they are killing human beings more and more every year than the previous. And how do you sleep at night knowing that?
I actually wanted to indicate that we look at the environmental impacts of the nuclear fuel cycle as part of the environmental impact statement. That includes studies into the amounts of radioactive material released from the fuel cycle, starting from mining onwards. So to the extent that when you have an opportunity to take a look at the GEIS, we have it on the CD out in the lobby. If you think there are some of the underlying basis elements of that are somehow inadequate, we'd accept that as environmental scope and comment. So, and part of your packet, you have how you can email in scope and comment, and we'll also be back here on March 3rd to take it in direct form if you're interested in coming out again.
PGE has something they'd like to say.
Okay.
I'm Lauren Sharp. I'm a Senior Director of Engineering Services at Diablo Canyon. I have the Strategic Projects Group report to me, which includes the license renewal process as well as the spent fuel storage. I also have engineering, and I also have a group called Geosciences, which, similar to AmiCamera, they deal with the geophysics as well as the impacts of earthquakes and provide a lot of that insight. So, first of all, I'd like to thank the Commission for the open dialogue to make this process open and transparent as we listen to the issues as well as the concerns from the community as we deal into the scoping process. I would also like to mention that like the rest of you in the community, we take our responsibility for safety very seriously. It's a responsibility of each and every one of us at Diablo Canyon to operate the facility safe. And we provide safe, clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. And we do that in many reasons because of our own employees live in the area, as well as our friends and our families. So it's an important message that we have to our employees to take that challenge seriously. In a couple comments I wanted to expand on that came up in some of the dialogue, as Dr. Kammer indicated earlier in the seismic issues, she indicated the desire to understand the hazards associated with seismic events, and she... Thank you. She also... can you hear me? Are you there?
Can you come out this way a little bit? I think we're still too close to that speaker over there somehow.
So as she indicated, from a seismic standpoint, you look at the hazard, and then you also design the facilities for that hazard, and And she explained quite well about the hazards, and I did want to indicate that we take those hazards as we install that design adequacy into our structures as part of the nuclear design that the NRC then reviews to. So that's part of the ongoing additional depth, defense in depth that we have as part of the seismic issue. A lot of questions about the why now process. Really, as the CPUC scoped us in 2007 to look into license renewal, one of the criteria that they gave us was to ensure that we made a decision and submitted that before the 2011 timeframe, with a concern that if license renewal was not granted, they needed at least a 10-year timeframe to replace the power from Diablo Canyon to come up with an alternative. So from a standpoint of why now, that is probably the most dominant reason of why now that we submitted it in this particular process. Thank you.
Okay, we had one last hand that we wanted to get to before we have to convene.
Yeah, Liz would like to, can you stand?
Sure. My name is Liz Affelberg, and I'm with the Mothers for Peace, and I'm one of the two original interveners in the licensing proceedings in 1973. And back then in 1973, we asked that baseline studies on cancers around the plant be done so that comparisons could be made after the plant operates. And it was denied. That's all.
Thank you, Liz. And Jane, did you have a short statement you want? I think this will be the last thing that we do before we close up, because we're already almost a half hour over.
Thank you. This is brief. This is not from me. This is from Susan Atley, San Luis Obispo friend. Her concern is, I'm reading now, is my understanding correct? Number one, the water surrounding the rods must be kept cool to prevent overheating. Two.
Can we go those in series?
Okay.
Is okay. Her understanding correct? The water surrounding the rods must be kept cool to prevent overheating.
The actual question is below the four statements, so just keep reading. We got
okay.
the same. We answered the same question this
that's
afternoon.
That's true. That's true. Okay. Two, an efficient cooling system is working at Diablo. Three, if this automatic system fails, an emergency cooling system can be used automatically or by physically turning on the valves to permit cooling water to surround the reactor. Four, because photographs plainly show iron railroad tracks of Guatemala twisted into an S by the earthquake force, it is conceivable that all of the coolant pipes and valves could be damaged so that no coolant water could be put into the containment vessels. My question is, Susan Atley's question is, if the coolant systems fail and the reactors cannot be cooled, will the extreme heat eventually cause damage and release radioactive materials into the atmosphere, ground, and ocean water?
I'd like to answer that if I could, Ms. Swanson. The piping that the water, the cooling water needs to flow is built and designed much better than the railroad tracks in Guatemala. It's designed to withstand the effects of a fairly large seismic event, and still maintain it the capability of providing water to the core.
Okay. We've gone a half hour over. I would like to wax philosophically.
Bill, I just wanted to address that we had two cards related to high-level waste that we didn't answer because we don't have an expert here. If the person or persons that submitted these cards, if they give me their contact information, either an email or a phone number, we can get back to them with answers to these questions.
Okay, I now have less time to wax philosophically about closing comments. I wanted to thank everybody from the panel for the answers they gave. I'd like to thank Dr. Kammerer for participating by phone over 6-plus hours of a day that she's trying to prepare for other meetings. I'd like to thank Ron and Harry for coming and providing some perspective on the emergency planning, emergency preparedness. But I'd like to thank all of you for coming, asking the questions, asking the hard questions. I'm sure that there were questions that weren't satisfactory, the answers. I'm sure that there were questions that you didn't think were answered completely. We did the best we could in the time we have. We'll be back in 3 weeks. 3 weeks to take information from the public and get some scoping comments for the environmental review. Anything else that the folks from the top would like to say?
We certainly appreciate your coming out this evening and taking the time. We will be in touch. To the extent that you have additional questions, we have some of our contact information on those handouts. We'll respond as possible. Thank you.
AGP needs to strike down their equipment, and the NRC folks who said, let me get with you later, they're still there, so we have another half hour that you can get that information that they said to see them about after the meeting.